It's about 9 months ago that the High Court had a damning decision against the Dimension Data Six, as they are called, six directors of Dimension Data who were accused of all kinds of heinous crimes by Judge Denise Fisher. At the time, Rob Herzog was very outspoken about it. Well, there's been quite a bit of water under the bridge, not least 2 days ago when the Didata 6 issued a statement to say, hang on a minute, it's not us who were the bad guys. It was NTT, the Japanese company that we sold the business to. They, the fiends. We'll find out from Rob if he's changed his mind. So just by way of a little bit of background, Rob, you know Jeremy Ord and Doc Watson and the other protagonists who were really the heroes of the South African business scene to a large degree in the 80s and the 90s after building Didata into a fabulous global company. Of course, that didn't last. We all know the story there. They, along with the rest of the dot-com bust, they also went through tough times, but they hung in there and eventually sold it off to the Japanese, to NTT, massive Japanese company, and were well known. But their reputations have been trashed by Judge Denise Fisher. They're now trying to rehabilitate themselves. I know that you've done a bit more work on this. And, well, what's your conclusion?
Well, you're innocent until proven guilty, even in South Africa. That's where they stand right now. And to their credit, they have appealed Judge Fisher's damning judgment. And having read the judgment, and I know I'm a businessman, not a lawyer. So I read it at the encouragement of a number of friends of mine, lawyers, who said, you've got to read this like a crime novel. And I read it. It was 70 pages or so. And it really was riveting and terrifying and horrifying on all fronts. And when you read something that is one-sided, and really was one-sided because it was the judgment of Judge Fisher, you know, it was damning. I read it and said, oh my God, this is terrible. This is a Keystone Cops fraud at its most amateur version. You know, how could they have done this? It's bad for capitalism. It's bad for foreign direct investment. It's devastating for, you know, our fight against BEE. It all looks terribly bad. But the reality was, and when you look at the appeal that the six executives have put forward, you realize there's always two sides to every story. And, you know, I've never been involved in deep litigation. I've never been sued. I've never sued anyone. But, you know, when you hear a defense lawyer defending someone, they do such a good job with the evidence that they have and the information they have, you could be persuaded. Now, these are people that are expert in the dark arts. You know, a defense lawyer, if that's all you hear, you come to the conclusion that person is innocent. But when, you know, there's the attack lawyer on the other side, when all that's what you hear, you go, this person is guilty. And I think what we heard was Judge Fisher's judgment based on what I've discovered, entirely affidavits. So there was no courtroom hearing. There were no witnesses in the witness box testifying, and there was no documentary evidence presented in the court of law. So this was purely a judgment based on affidavits. Okay. And what that means is, you know, people write an affidavit or have it written on their behalf, typewriters tackering away, and then they sign the affidavits. And one thing I know, and we all know, is affidavits are easy to sign. Affidavits can be bought. I'm not saying they were in this case, but without a court of law, without witnesses being put in a witness box and having to actually, you know, state the case in a court of law, without documentary evidence being provided in a court of law, it's a very different animal. And so while I have no idea what the judgment will be, the defendants have said, hang on, this wasn't fair, it wasn't right, and the conclusion's incorrect. Okay? And so they've gone to the Supreme Court of Appeal. with their argument. And the Supreme Court of Appeal will look at it and they will either judge this on the basis of its merits, the affidavits, or it will say there needs to be a proper judgment based on a court of law. There need to be witnesses, NTT, Dimension Data, previous executives, current executives, and they need to be brought forward in a court of law and judged on that basis. So that's what's going to come out of the Supreme Court of Appeal. And it's fascinating, the argument that the defendants and their team have put together, because what they're saying is that, you know, obviously they're stating their case, but they're saying a number of things. They're saying one thing, that NTT has withheld documents and withheld evidence. They've said that they weren't a front for BEE. NTT was, because NTT was trying to exit South Africa. And so they were trying to play the BEE game in reverse, not the six executives under fraud. They're also saying that Sonia de Brame, who fronted the BEE Women Black Consortium, was actually fully aware of what was going on. But more than that, that she stole 5 million rand. So she's guilty on another front and is not to be trusted as a witness. They've also alleged, and I don't hold a lot of credence in this, but they've alleged that that NTT were using a sort of very dodgy, I think it's civil law firm, who the Guptas used, called Stein Scop. And they're saying that, you know, these guys are not credible. Now, I don't hold a lot of value in that because, you know, the Guptas had their legal defense. Who knows what that's all about? And they also had a lot to say about NTT's governance practices. And again, I don't put a lot of, you know, you have to throw everything into your defense. The attack has to throw everything into the attack. So I put those two things aside. But there's also an issue here which worries me a little about, and it's the timing issue. And what the defense is saying is that it's very important that the Supreme Court of Appeal needs to have a look at the timing at which the MBO was terminated versus the timing at which the acquisition of the campus and the art was made. And he said there's a big disconnect here, and that materially affects the case. On a separate note, on the final issue, I know that the NPA and Hawks are investigating this, and I don't know what that means. I don't know whether it means that there's something untoward about this case that we don't know about, and I'm not sure what that angle means. But the reality of this is, you know, defense seem to have elements in their case that are strong, that the Supreme Court of Appeal need to be looking at. And I do think, you know, in my instinct is, you know, a judgment based only on affidavits is a very dangerous precedent. You know, I wouldn't want to have a case that I was involved in judged only on affidavits, because affidavits can be bought. And I know that it's a lot easier than being in the witness box.
Yeah, it reminds me of the whole VBS saga. I read through Advocate Terry Motau, who was the investigator. And it's really worth reading through, in the same way as when you read through those 70 pages. I think that was also 70-odd pages, but also read like a crime novel. But the one thing that came to me there that I remember very clearly was that there was a whole bunch of affidavits from people within VBS who said, no, nothing was wrong, nothing had happened, etc. Until it was explained to them that if they fessed up and if they told the truth, what they told the truth on, they could not be charged on. And Advocate Matau said virtually all of them turned their affidavits around 180 degrees. So, okay, I've got these principles, tear them up, throw them away. Here is actually the real truth. And by the way, I'm telling you the truth now. And according to this law or this process that we've inherited from the Americans, which has been used very successfully there, it meant that you can really tell the truth. And as long as you fess up, you won't be charged on that. So I get what you're saying about the affidavits, but man, the stakes are high here. You've got a judge, Denise Fisher, I know quite a few people who say she's really good and very thorough. You've got NTT, a big multinational Japanese company, and Sonia de Brain. And if the six protagonists, Jeremy Orr, Doc Watson, and co, are right, Well, there are going to be some very tarnished reputations. And as we know from Warren Buffett, that's the most valuable thing anybody has. So, Rob, having seen both sides of the story, are you telling us now that we haven't got to the bottom of this by a long shot?
We haven't. And, you know, it's one thing signing an affidavit, you know, because in many ways the defense lawyers will be saying to the witnesses, here is a document that we believe reflects your views. Don't you think this is correct? Please sign it. And it's relatively easy to read it, having written by smart attorneys, you know, on the attack side, on the sort of Judge Fisher side. It's very easy then to read it, say, yeah, that's about it, and sign it, having been written by the lawyers, you know, in the prosecution side. But when these people are put into the witness box, it's a whole other matter, and they're cross-examined by the defense lawyers. It's a whole different animal. And it would be NTT executives and Dimension Data previous and current executives who'd be thrown into the witness box, and Sonia Debrain. And the defense attorneys will ask questions that, you know, are not reflected in the affidavit. So, you know, who knows what the result's going to be? Who knows who's innocent and guilty? And I think amongst the six executives, there are different animals there. You know, there's the Jeremy situation, then the Bodley and Masiakos situation, and the Steve Nathan situation. I think they're kind of different elements here. I'm not saying different levels of innocence or guilt. I'm just saying very different angles here. And there may be different judgments based on, you know, each of these three groupings, you know.
How are they different, Rob?
Well, Bodley and Masiakos, and Saki Masiakos were kind of brought along as part of the consortium, but they weren't involved in negotiating the deal, valuing the deal, dealing with other bidders, or dealing with NTT directly on the purchase of the campus and the art. They were kind of just part of the consortium. So they're probably less relevant to the story. You know, Steve Nathan is probably more relevant because he was right in the front line and on both sides of the table. He was representing the seller, the buyer. And, you know, there is some element of conflict there. Whether he did anything illegal or not, I have no idea. But, you know, he was definitely conflicted, it seems. But maybe he disclosed that conflict. I don't know.
And Jeremy Ord and Doc Watson?
Well, Jeremy Ord and Doc Watson were obviously trusted by NTT. So you have to have a look at quite carefully that what NTT expected of them, who they were representing, and what NTT understood their role was. And that isn't entirely clear. Judge Fisher's judgment is they knew which side they were on. They were representing NTT. They didn't disclose to NTT. They were on both sides of the table. But, you know, that isn't entirely clear with regards to the appeal. You know, what they're saying is they had the MBO had terminated at that point, and they were, you know, not conflicted. And that's what the appeals say. You know, they're also challenging the credibility of Judge Fisher. And again, I think that's a, you know, I know they have to throw all of these things onto the table, but, you know, she had one of her prior judgments challenged, and, you know, that put a slight mark on her copybook, and they're hanging a fair amount on that. I don't know how relevant that is. But I think, you know, if the Supreme Court of Appeal says, this needs to be in the court of law, the witnesses need to be cross-examined, all documentation needs to be provided, and then it's a fair trial. And I think that is probably the only way we're going to find out what the hell has really happened.
We do know that their reputations have been dragged through the mud. It was a bit of a media frenzy at the time that the crime novel came out from the judge. Is it possible to ever rehabilitate those reputations?
I think it is. And I mean, if they're completely cleared, they're back in business. I do, you know, particularly in South Africa, because, you know, there's so much politicking and so much lawfare and so many things being slung around at people left, right, and center, and everyone seems to get on with their lives. You know, we have a cabinet, an ANC cabinet that is made of criminals. Existing criminals that haven't yet gone to jail. we know of the gangsterism that sits amongst some of the cabinet ministers, the ANC cabinet ministers, and they haven't gone to trial, they haven't gone to jail. So, and they're happily carrying on. So, you know, I do think Jeremy has a very good reputation. He's been an extraordinary entrepreneur and businessman, and I think he will come back from this. I do, depending on the result of this trial.
I had an interesting
It's an extraordinary business. Let's not mess about.
And he stuck around when the going was tough. That was the one thing I think that anybody looking in from the outside has got to admire him for it.
He hasn't left the country, and he's appealing the decision. He's here in South Africa. And, you know, I did say in my original conversation with BizNews eight, 9 months ago, I said, you know, it'll be a good positive sign for the defense if they appeal. Let's see if they do. And they did.
I spoke this morning with William Sanderson Mayer. He's one of the most astute columnists. He's been writing a column on politics for more than 30 years. And he pointed out the absolute silence within the Democratic Alliance when Emma Powell was attacked by the ANC for actually telling the truth. I want to know from your perspective, because you've been attacked as well for telling the truth. And Jeremy Ord and Doc Watson and the others are not as well known as the two of those, but these were business icons, would now be saying to everybody, including myself, I had a lengthy conversation with Jeremy on the judgment where he kind of castigated me, but I guess he was emotional, where they were saying they are telling the truth. Are people actually believing them? Are in the same way as the silence of the lambs with Emma Powell and Rob Herzog? We've had a bit of a silence of the lambs here with Ord and Watson.
I think with Ord and Watson in this case, people are a bit confused. You know, the judgment of Judge Fisher was so damning that people went, I mean, this looks terrible. But then the appeal happens, there's water under the bridge, time goes by, and people kind of think, and then the next shock happens in the system. You know, every second day there's some horrific thing happening in South Africa, scandal, corruption, evil, murders, rape, farm murders. You know, I think South Africans have PTSD. They just move on to the next thing. I think a lot of people had forgotten about the Die Data NTT issue. And there's this fuzzy feeling that maybe these executives did something wrong. And there's some people who sort of follow the story, think, well, they've appealed and maybe we'll wait till the appeal. It's South Africa as usual. I mean, there's so many bad things going on. On Emma Powell, I believe she has information, damning information, that hasn't been revealed yet. That damning. And I think the DA know what it is. I think a lot of people know what it is. And I think it just hasn't come out yet. And I think it's pretty explosive for the ANC and Cyril Ramaphosa personally. I mean, I think this is yet to come. But, you know, again, South Africa's used to so many horrific things. Every day, there's more news about corruption and evil and, you know, the ANC being an Iran proxy and them knowing things beforehand. And, you know, all I know is that the CIA actually knows exactly what's going on. The Americans have all this information. We think it's a new revelation coming out. The Americans know what's going on. They absolutely know.
But Rob, I don't want to push it too far, but there might be parallels then with what's going on here, because what has come out from Ord and Co. this time round is incredibly explosive. If you are happening to be an executive of NTT, it's a massive multinational, one of the greatest of the Japanese companies. And if you guys have been playing fast and loose in a far-flung part of the empire, as they're alleging, then what is at stake here is sufficient to send the very best lawyers in the world to come and conduct the lawfare, and as well for Sonia de Bruyn, if what they're saying, that she stole 5 million rand and that she is actually a criminal, not the person who has been made out to be, you know, purer than Caesar's wife kind of thing. So there is a huge, huge amount at stake here as well, in the same way as potentially there was for Emma Powell. So I suppose when you think it through from that perspective, of course, it's more confusing than ever, but it does say that there is stuff going on that we don't really know and will only know in time.
Without a doubt, on both sides, unquestionably. Look, when you look at giant corporations that get into trouble in South Africa, there's Bain, McKinsey, I think it was, I'm scared to say the wrong name. Was it KPMG?
Yes, it was.
And SAP, SAP?
It was, SAP
and
as
they,
well.
They were up to absolutely, all four of them, absolutely no good in this country. I mean, Bain's closed his practice down in South Africa. It's so guilty. But they all survive. They'll carry on worldwide. Oh, we burned off things in South Africa. Let's carry on worldwide. And no doubt, if NTT has done something wrong in South Africa, they'll just keep on ticking. They're looking anyway to exit South Africa as their African Middle East headquarters. They have already. They just haven't, you know, closed off the details. I think they've moved their headquarters to Dubai, I think, for Africa Middle East, NTT Docomo. They've given up on South Africa being the headquarters. But if they are proven to have done something wrong on BEE or whatever in South Africa, you know, it's not really going to affect them. They'll just move on.
Yeah. Well, I suppose Dimension Data South Africa would have to find a new father or a new home, a new parent. But from your perspective, Rob, what is going to happen now? We've got the Supreme Court of Appeal. I think it's 5 judges, but anyway, there are a number of judges who sit there. You generally get a good finding, unlike in some of the other courts where there have been some questionable findings. But this one, everybody seems to believe that the Supreme Court of Appeal is the one that you really can trust. Let's just say that they decide that there is a case to be answered. There is truth that we need to know. It's so important that this has got to be held in a court of law. Would it be open court? Would we the people, get to see exactly what's going on?
I would think so, yeah. It's not criminal. It's civil, as far as I can tell. And yeah, I think it would be very an open case. You know, if the Steinhoff case, if Joosten had not killed himself, which is the 100% sign he was guilty, you know, it would have been the most extraordinary case. And I don't think any jurors could have got their heads around it. I mean, it would be so damn complicated. This is a lot less complicated, and I think will be riveting to see how it goes.
It's also putting capitalism and South African business on trial. So I guess there are those who are going to say, yes, well, Herzog is the capitalist activist. So of course he's going to say that these guys need the benefit of the doubt. But is that not just the principle of law?
Look, you do need the benefit of the doubt. You need to have a proper case. I think a case of court of law with witnesses in the stand is the only fair way, really. I think having discovered the whole thing was done on affidavits, you know, Jeremy's legal team dropped the ball, no question, for Fisher to come out with such a damning judgment. But nonetheless, you know, doing it on affidavits is pretty unfair. I wouldn't want to be accused in that way.
Has he got a new legal team?
I don't know. No, I haven't.
Have you spoken to him about any of this?
No, I haven't. I mean, I think Jeremy was pretty upset about me speaking out. But the reality is, you know, he's a big boy and he knows that what came out in the judgment, you know, I think his team could have done a better job. Maybe his appeal team have got their act together. Looks like they have.
And your mutual friends, what are they telling you about him and his case?
Well, he's in country and he's defending himself. And that's, you know, that's always a good thing. You know, he hasn't shot himself in the cliffs in Hermanus and he hasn't run from the country. So that's a very positive sign. Good for Jeremy. You know, he's standing up and being counted. It's the only way to do it. And I don't know how long this takes. I mean, it's probably another year, I'm guessing. It's just, you know, if it's Zuma, it's the Stalingrad defense, it'll take another 5 years and nothing will happen. But I think this is a legitimate, it's being dealt with properly now.
Fascinating country that we live in. Rob Herzog, capitalist activist, Alec Hogg. I'm the editor of BizNews, and we look forward to the next installment in this saga.